This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
For you there. I love them. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us as we move along late into August. It is Monday, August the 22nd. In a few minutes, Joel Griffith of the Heritage Foundation is going to be with us, and we are going to talk about the housing crisis in the United States. And I'll tell you what, take a look. Things are slowing down to a crawl. Who's to blame for it? And how are we going to get out of it? So stay tuned in a few minutes for that. And a new NBC News poll finds almost three-quarters of Americans think that we are going in the wrong direction. Have you ever heard in any era that many people think America is going the wrong way? We are going to talk about that with our eye in the sky a little bit later in the show. The northern sky, that is, Angelo Ceresi. So stay tuned for him as well. And Wisconsin and New Jersey school districts decide to remove two completely different symbols. And we are going to tell you what they are a bit later in the show. So stay tuned for that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, we have a good one. Especially if you're looking for two-year colleges, the top 10 states with the best community colleges. So lots to go, lots going on today in our show. By the way, don't forget to listen to Senior Voice America. They precede our program, but they are on Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. here on the Tan Talk Radio Network, Tim Bryce and Company. Great show. Make sure you listen. All right. So, all of these major cities, every one of them, is having a crime problem. I can't think of one that is not. And it turns out that San Francisco, Cleveland, and Portland, Oregon have the most deserted downtowns in the U.S. right now, thanks to soaring crime rates and homelessness, and the fact that they are scaring away both workers and tourists. Now, this is a study by the Institute of Governmental Studies at the University of California, Berkeley. It says that right nearby, San Francisco's downtown area was found to be only 31% active, 31% active over the spring of 2022 when compared to its pre-pandemic population level as far as activity. Second was Cleveland, only 36% active. And third, Portland, with only 41% active. So I guess if you want to find dead towns, those are the three. Meanwhile, the ones that seem to have the most activity, Salt Lake City in Utah, Bakersfield, California, and Columbus, Ohio, they are apparently enjoying the fastest comeback, seeing their downtown activity go up by more than 110% since 2019. Now, I don't know how they figure this. How do they do the survey on this? It says here, by tracking more than 18 million smartphone users traveling through America's busiest downtowns, researchers found that the three cities we have mentioned, which have been plagued by a spike of crime, are trailing in their COVID-19 recovery. Hmm. Now, there's crime rates in other cities that are forcing back activity as well. New York, L.A., Chicago, Houston, and Phoenix. So it's not just relegated to those three. So the question is, what are these Democratic mayors doing about it, other than talking? What are they doing about it? When it comes to crime, everybody knows what the answers were a long time ago, but they don't want to talk about it. The black populations in the inner cities contribute to most of the crime, most of the gun violence, most of the homicides. And the reason that they are contributing to it is because for all of these generations, there is no father in the family for about three-quarters of the families in black communities. That's number one. When you don't have a good father figure, especially for the young men that are growing up, what happens? They join gangs, don't they? And they get guns, and they start shooting each other. And it's the same in every city. And we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to offend anybody. But when we're talking about crime, let's be honest. What comes to mind? What do you visualize? You visualize a black man committing a crime in some downtown or inner city area. That's what I visualize. That's not being racist. Just being honest about it. So these mayors of these major cities, they know this. But we encourage, with all the giveaway programs that we keep sending into these communities, we encourage the lack of a father figure. We encourage the welfare state. We encourage people not to be responsible and active, energetic, wanting to work. We encourage it. And it's been that way for, I don't know, ever since I was a kid, it's been that way. The inner city communities in the major cities have all the crime. That's where most all the crime occurs. And it's always the same. If it's always the same in every major city all the time, then we know. We know that there's something not working in those cities if we continue to allow it, because they ain't going to change. But it's very sad, and lots of people die, and communities are ravaged, and look what's happening to the downtown areas now. Now the crime is, what do? You just walk right in it with a sledgehammer?
Well, I noticed in L.A., one of those places that you mentioned, that certain stores, you know, in L.A., I believe in certain parts, they're still requiring you wear a mask, or at least they're recommending that you're wearing a mask. Some L.A. downtown stores are not letting you in if you have a mask on.
Yeah, because they're worried that you're coming in to rob them.
And because they want to get a clear-cut picture of you.
Exactly.
Robbing them.
Yeah. Yeah, I would not encourage a mask if I was a retailer.
You know, when this whole mask thing came out, I'm amazed that bank robberies are not up. I mean, the mask, you're halfway there. You put a hat on, a pair of sunglasses.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, I know. No, it's true. But now the brazen robberies that are going on.
Oh, they just,
jewelry stores and
you see what they did to that,
retail stores. Did you
see what they did to that 7-Eleven where about 100 of them did the flash mob in there?
I couldn't believe it.
Just raped that store.
Absolutely tore it apart. It looked like it was, I don't know, how many people were in there? 30 of them?
No, they said it was about 100.
100 of them?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So we kind of know what's going on. We're just afraid to talk about it. Here's the thing. Why do the populations of these cities keep reelecting Democratic mayors? Do they like crime? Are they so, dependent on the handouts that they think the Democrats will give them, that they are willing to sacrifice all for that money? Is that what it is?
I think they're just given a line of BS that they just believe.
How can they believe it over all the generations?
How can
they believe it over all the generations that this has been going on?
Very, two words, Paul. Trump's fault.
It's been going on since
before
Trump was born.
Before Trump was president. We didn't have this looting before Trump was president. It's the lingering effects of the Trump administration. The current president says the same thing. Because of the former regime here. We've had these problems.
Well, they'll continue as long as we continue to ignore the real problems. Okay, anyway, let's take our break. When we come back, we are going to talk about, well, we're going to talk about the real estate industry, what's happened to it, who's to blame for the priciest housing in history.
There is nothing that is wrong wanting you to stay here with me.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
And we're back on a Monday, and we thank you so very much for being with us. Well, the number of home sale cancellations really went through the roof, can I use that term, in July. Another two-year high as buyers retreated from the market amid rising mortgage rates and steep home prices. About 63,000 home purchase agreements were called off in July. That's about 16% of homes that went into contract. That's a very high number. Now, this is an analysis by a firm called Redfin. They say there are two reasons for the hike in cancellations. Homes are sitting on the market longer, which gives buyers more power to demand repairs and other concessions. And home buyers are also worried about the increasingly dark economic outlook as the Fed moves to tighten interest rates. So we've got Joel Griffith, our old buddy, who's a research fellow for financial regulations at the Great Heritage Foundation with us. And we're going to talk a little bit about who's to blame for all of this. Joel, welcome back to Freedom Works.
Hey, thank you for having me today.
It's always our pleasure to have you. And I know you'll bring some interesting thoughts into this. So what is going on right now? Why is it all of a sudden? Is it just part of the whole pandemic and inflation and all of these other things, and it's grabbing the home market as well?
Well, there's a lot of causes for this bubble, but the primary driver of this housing bubble is actually our own federal government and the Federal Reserve. If you look at the amount of money that has been pumped into the housing sector just because of the Federal Reserve, and a lot of people don't know this, but the Fed has purchased several trillion dollars worth of mortgage-backed security, and in effect, that funnels capital into the housing market. They've done this just over the past 2 years during this pandemic, and it's a big part of the reason why we've seen the home prices inflate to such a dramatic extent. And you know, I don't want to exaggerate here. I'm just looking at the numbers. If you look at what it costs in terms of a home to median household income, if you look at the terms of a house and inflation-adjusted numbers, home prices have never been higher, and that's adjusted for inflation. And, you know, if you go to buy a house right now, a mortgage on a median-priced home is going to run you 56% more today than it did just 1 year ago, not just because of the rising interest rates, but because that cost of that house has gone up by so much, and we have the government to blame.
Wow. That's really scary. So Are we specifically looking at the Biden administration as opposed to, say, the Republicans, or what? What is it besides the Fed? What is it that the that the administrations are doing?
Well, this has been housing policy now under Republican and Democrat administration, really going back to the early 1990s. And during the early 1990s, we saw the mortgage giants, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, we saw them really put on turbocharge, where they wanted to drive more capital into the housing market, ostensibly to help people who couldn't buy homes to purchase homes. Well, guess what? We basically saw the home ownership rate stay stable between 65 and 70% over the next 30 years. And meanwhile, prices more than doubled in real terms. We're talking about inflation-adjusted terms. Home ownership rates remain stable, and the families that could get a home ended up paying a lot more. And that's because any time that you have the federal government getting involved with diverting capital into a sector, you're going to see prices in that sector go up far more quickly than in other sectors. Think about education, right? College tuition, public school, dollars per student in general, all of that grows astronomically compared to the rest of the economy. Same thing with healthcare, because healthcare is about 60% socialized now. Healthcare has gone up more in real terms than just about every other sector. And now the same holds true with housing, because you have governments that are basically guaranteeing the loan made through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and they account for about 90% of all the mortgages that are securitized. And you add on top of that the fact that you have our central bank printing dollars to buy up mortgages. Well, that's going to pump up the mortgage market, which is what we have seen done. And, you know, if you look at from February 2020 through this summer, home prices, not just talking about mortgage payments, home prices went up 43%. In the last 12 months, home prices went up 20%. And, you know, one of the best ways to judge how expensive a home is to look at what the typical person earns and then look at what the price of a typical house is relative to that income. Well, normally, for many, many decades, it was about 5-to-1. If medium income was $50,000, you could expect the typical house is going to cost $250,000. Well, today, that home price to median income ratio is an all-time record, 8.1. Right? If you make about $50,000 a year, well, the typical person makes roughly that. The typical home then is going to be around $400,000. That's why we're seeing so many families either priced out of being able to buy a home, or we're seeing people have to fork out over so much more of their income just to stay in their home.
Right.
The government has caused this problem, and they're trying to put the blame on investors. They're trying to put the blame on greed. They're trying to blame everybody, but admitting that they themselves have caused the problem.
We're talking with Joel Griffith. He's a research fellow for financial regulations at the Heritage Foundation about the housing crisis. Joel, it seems to be the same old scenario that if you get the federal government involved in any private industry, it's going to make it worse. It's going to make it more expensive. It's going to make it more bureaucratic. There are going to be more regulations. It will intimidate people. It will stop the creation of the product. I mean, we can go to healthcare. We can go to housing. We can go to education. You can go anywhere. And when you get the government involved, it stifles the product. It stifles the sale. It raises the price. So it just seems like you're saying the same thing that we can apply to almost any industry when the government gets its tentacles on it.
Yeah, and it's just that housing is specifically, particularly problematic because it's such a big component of how we build wealth. It's such a big percentage of our income. And so I think we're able to see the results a lot more dramatically. And look, I also want to mention, too, that when it comes to housing, it's not just the federal government that's the problem. It's also state and local government. The big part of the price of a house today isn't the lumber. It's not the concrete. It's not the wiring. Sometimes the biggest component of the cost of the home are actually the regulations that are put in place. And mm-hmm. We've looked at a number of studies at Heritage that estimate that in many communities, particularly in these urban areas, the regulatory cost of a house can be about 30% of the purchase price. So think about that. A $500,000 condo, about $150,000 of that often are all the regulations, the green regulations, the sometimes needless environmental regulations, zoning regulations. That's a big part of it as well. And then you tack on top of that, if you think about the rental side, because rent has become extraordinarily expensive as well. Most many parts of the country, rent today is about 20%.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
20 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the rent, because I think about these people that cannot afford a house. And so they got to rent. And all of a sudden, the rental prices are going through the roof as well. And you start worrying about what these people are going to do. And then you worry about the landlords because they're raising the rent because their costs are going up.
Well, and once again, the government says they're here to help. So what does the government do? Well, the government's put in place additional environmental restrictions. They put in place rent control. In some states, it's statewide. In Oregon, they're doing basically trying to impose statewide rent control. Same thing goes with New York City, despite study after study that shows that rent control actually diminishes the supply of affordable housing because it makes it more difficult for landlords to actually upgrade residences because they can't recoup their investment. And then oftentimes, they can't even take in enough resources to pay for the expenses. And so these units fall into disrepair and then end up off the market. And then to think about what happened this last year and a half, where you had a nationwide eviction moratorium, where people were allowed to squat for months on end, for 18 months at a time, were allowed to squat. And now there's this precedent in place that says you're going to have a president, you're going to have governors try to stop landlords from actually enforcing their property rights. And I understand maybe the intentions were good, but it ends up hurting not just the property owners, it ends up hurting future renters as well. Because the ones that are going to be most hurt by this are those with lower credit, poor credit, lesser income, because landlords are now going to be more hesitant to actually rent out their property to them or to build more units to actually house them. Once again, government is making the problem worse. So if we have states across the nation trying to replicate the worst of New York City and San Francisco, which if you've tried to look at rent there anytime recently, you'll realize that rent control isn't helping. You might have, it's kind of like in a communist country, that bread might be marked at 25 cents a loaf. But if you don't have any bread available, having that low sticker price certainly doesn't help you. You're going to starve. Same goes true with housing. You might be able to put a low sticker price on that rental unit, but if there's no rental units available, having that low sticker price of $1,000 a month for a two-bedroom doesn't do you much good if there's no units there for you to rent.
So, Joel, it just sounds so complicated. I mean, I'm listening. I know it's, you know, it's not only the feds, it's also the states, and it's the local, and it's all the regulations. So what are we going to do? Are prices ever going to come down again? Is it because the Fed is raising the interest rate? Is that where it all starts? Because they're raising interest rates, which raises mortgages? I mean, when they go in the opposite direction, is that when everything is going to change? Or is there anything that, for instance, I don't know that the Biden administration is focusing on the housing situation whatsoever, but what could they do?
Well, what we need to have done long-term, we need to Congress get involved and rein in, number one, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. We need to diminish their footprint. And by that, I mean, it'd be nice to fully privatize them, but at the very least, we need to cap these loan sizes that they guarantee at a lower level. You can get a loan in many parts of the country for over $800,000, fully guaranteed by the U.S. taxpayer, almost 100% of the housing value. That is pumping up prices. So first, we need to lower the loan size that they'll actually guarantee. We need to stop the government basically subsidizing and guaranteeing cash-out refis. We need to stop the guarantees altogether on those loans. That'll be a good first step.
Mm-hmm.
The second step is the Congress needs to get involved and say to the Federal Reserve, no more buying up of these mortgage-backed securities. Congress needs to recognize that part of the reason why homes are so unaffordable is that you've had our central bank printing dollars to buy up mortgages, and it has funneled trillions of dollars into the housing sector. Get the Federal Reserve out of the system also. And then the third prong is for state and local governments to look at their own regulation on the housing space, whether it's rent control, whether it's zoning codes, whether it's density requirements, and these local governments need to look at what they have done to make this problem worse, and they need to loosen up these restrictions to allow more supply to be built.
Well, I wish they would listen, and I wish the Congress would get up and actually start worrying about it. I don't know, maybe it's because not enough people are screaming, but it's such a sad scenario right now. Let me ask you finally, would you call it a buyer's market then because of all of this going on, or what would you call it?
Well, still right now, even with prices softening in parts of the country, the price to median income is still near an all-time high. In many parts of the country, your mortgage payment, your taxes, your insurance altogether is still going to cost you more than it would cost to rent. And there's still a limited amount of inventory available. I've got a number of friends looking to buy their first homes now, starting families. And it's, despite the softening in the last few months, it's softening, but is still near all-time highs in terms of unaffordability. So it's tough right now, both for the buyers and also in many cases, even sometimes for the sellers, because with interest rates going up, it is a little harder for a lot of people to actually qualify for a mortgage. So I would say it's kind of the worst of both worlds.
Wow.
Tough on the buyers right now, and it's becoming tougher on the sellers.
Do you think all of this will, let's say, the fog will be lifted as the recession itself is lifted and we return to, I don't know what you would call it, pre-Biden or pre-pandemic, kind of a pre-pandemic environment?
Well, look, I unfortunately right now, I don't know that we're returning to a pre-pandemic environment so much as we are entering into an actual economic recession.
Yeah.
Our economy has been shrinking now for two quarters, and I'm looking at a lot of this new data coming in. It's showing inventories growing, and when you see businesses having inventory stockpiling, that suggests that consumer demand is softening. We see the jobs numbers, which I know everybody's celebrating that top line big number, but if you dig deeper even on the jobs report, you realize the number of full-time jobs actually went down. You have a lot of people that are having to pick up second jobs, part-time jobs, to make ends meet. And you see retail sales leveling off, and at the same time, consumer debt is exploding. And then another really dark cloud on the horizon, productivity, amount of stuff that you produce per hour is plunging at a historic rate. So all of this suggests that we're actually going to be going through a time of economic uncertainty and possibly an extended slowdown. And a lot of that is related to what our national and what some of our state governments did during this COVID era, where we never should have shut down. We should never have put in place these restrictions. And on top of that, we should have never printed $6 trillion to pretend it didn't happen, because we're going to be paying for those consequences far into the future. We're paying for it now in terms of inflation. That is directly related to all the money printing. But we're going to be paying for it into the future in terms of a slower economy and in terms of having to actually pay interest on all that debt that we took on.
Wow. Well, Joel, I'm going to take that cyanide capsule out of my drawer after talking with you and eyeball it here. No. Listen, things are tough. I appreciate all of your very honest look at what is going on. I guess we just have to pray. We got some religion here. We start backing the government out, which to me is the first place we start.
Well, look, and there's on our individual numbers levels, there's a number of things that we can do in terms of watching our own financial budget, trying to save more for the future, being more frugal. And look, we still have a wonderful nation. We have a republic. We have a chance this election to make a big difference. This isn't irreversible, but I do see for the coming 6 months to year, there's going to be some troublesome economic times ahead.
Okay. Well, Joel, as always, thank you so much. Look forward to the next time we chat.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Joel Griffith, Heritage Foundation. Going to take our break when we come back. A new NBC News poll says almost 75% of Americans think we are going in the wrong direction. We will talk about it with our Eye in the Northern Sky, Angelo Ceresi.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Steve Vaccaro, psychologist and host of the Chapters Wrap Live. Each live show will bring on top-notch guests from the nonprofit world. We are the advocacy show that provides a platform for other advocates. So please tune in on your drive home from work to share your voice. The Chapters Wrap, where unity and diversity meet one chapter at a time.
Listen to Kicking Unhealthy Relationships to the Curb at 5, Voices for Change at 6, Reach Out with Ray and Steve at 7, and the Chapters Wrap at 8, Wednesdays, here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
What's the buzz in Tampa Bay? Senior Voice America Radio, a unique morning variety program delivering the latest commentary on politics by host and political analyst Tim Bryce and the up-to-minute happenings of Wall Street. Beyond politics and finance, they scale the scholar's rampart by including topics on religion and nutrition with thought-provoking guests and interviews. Tune in every weekday from 8 to 10 a.m. on this Tan Talk station. Senior Voice America, serving our nation's seasoned citizens for over four decades.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. Thank you for listening with us. By the way, is this just hot off the press? You know, the judge, that magistrate that ordered or allowed, I guess, the raid on Mar-a-Lago and Donald Trump's home here in Florida. Well, he has admitted that the raid on Trump's home was, quote, unprecedented. He has formally rejected the Justice Department's argument to keep the affidavit secret. Now, it's going to take a while for it to come out, but he's basically saying, you know, we got to let the public know what's going on. There was a filing this morning, and he says he rejects the government's argument that the present record justifies keeping the entire affidavit under seal. Let's see here. He says the government argues that even requiring it to redact portions of the affidavit that could not reveal expert identities or investigative sources and methods imposes an undue burden on its resources and sets a precedent that could be disruptive and burdensome in future cases. So we'll see. I mean, you still know, no matter what, they're going to be redacting all kinds of stuff. And by the time they get through with it, you know, it might look like warmed over spaghetti. You won't be able to understand what it is that the affidavit even said.
I have a feeling there are going to be a lot of top people in the FBI looking for jobs.
Think so?
Yeah.
How about right? How about right at the top with Christopher Wray?
Well, you have to start at the top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you might be right. Meantime, nearly three quarters of Americans think the U.S. is headed in the wrong direction under Biden. This is an NBC poll. A whopping 74% say the country is on the wrong track. Just 21% feel the nation is headed in the right direction. This, according to NBC News. It found that more than half of the respondents, 58%, feel more worried that America's best years may already be behind us. Just 35% thinking the best years are yet to come. We have our eye in the northern sky. Things are just depressing all over here, Angelo. I'm beginning to worry myself. Do you think our best years are behind us?
Well, if the Democrats stay in power, yes. If the people don't change, the House and the Senate, we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like they will, at least in the House, and there's a good chance in the Senate. Maybe we needed a lousy president like Biden to kind of change things around a little bit.
Well, I mean, I saw a Fox poll the other night that says that the Democrats are closing ranks in the Congress. If 75% of the public think that we're headed in the wrong direction, how is it that the Democrats are gaining ground in the Congress? I don't get it.
Yeah, I'm not sure they are. I know I've seen the same things. First of all,
where are people getting this information from? These statisticians, where are they getting it from?
I don't know.
I mean,
I always think
smoking.
I think that they're usually, as far as parties go, they're usually democratically weighted.
Absolutely.
And you can always change that a little bit. I think the gap is a lot more than these polls are showing.
And not only that, you have Liz Cheney going on TV, how she's going to continue to keep going after Trump and everything like that. So you know what the January 6th committee is all about, right?
Right.
The American people have to see what is going on. This Mar-a-Lago incident.
Mar-a-Lago,
nothing
yep.
Nothing but trying to find something against Trump. And this is all that, you know, and the American people, I mean, you get one poll says they're closing the gap. The other poll says America's going down the wrong track. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
These people better start telling the truth, because all they're doing is lying to the American people.
Yeah. This same poll showed 42% of people approve of Biden's job. That's actually up a few points. He was down to 39%, you know, high 30s, according to some of the polls I was looking at.
People thinking that his bill is going to be anti-inflation. He's going to cause more taxes on us.
Right. Oh, yeah. I wonder if in the long run people are finally starting to figure out that a socialistic approach in our government doesn't work and it's bringing our country down. Do you think they are? Do you think this is the way they had to find out, the hard way, by showing how when we spend all this money like we do, the results are that we are getting weaker as a country?
Well, you know what I think? I think it's the young people that don't see what's going on. I think the young people are the ones that are buffaloed by all this. I mean, people in our generation and, you know, 50s, 60s, 40s, got to see what's going on. I mean, their life has got to be pretty hard for them.
Hey, Angelo, are you popping pills or something? I'm hearing this rattling.
I'm just getting my pills ready for the...
My God almighty.
I have...
Sounds like you're in a pharmacy is what it sounds like.
Well, if it wasn't for the VA, broke.
Oh, okay. So you're popping pills while you're talking to us. Well, that's all right.
Sorting about for the day. That's all.
Well, I hope you'll be in some sort of mental capacity by the end of our interview. Anyway.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I just get them ready for the week, you know?
We're teasing you a little bit. No problem there. Now, you're a Vietnam veteran.
Yes, Vietnam combat veteran. Yes.
You certainly were, and you served your country well. You're, to many people, you would be a hero.
I just did what I had to do. That's all.
Well, so... We celebrate the one-year anniversary, as you know, of Afghanistan and the pullout, and we left billions of dollars worth of equipment over there. And now, I don't know if you heard this, but I just read this. The Biden administration is reportedly pushing forward with talks to release billions of dollars in frozen assets to Afghanistan, despite the Taliban's refusal to cooperate. Says here, the U.S. and other nations froze billions of dollars worth of foreign-held assets belonging to the now-defunct Afghanistan government after the Taliban took over in 2021. What do you think about us pushing to release this money into the hands of the Taliban in Afghanistan?
I think he's crazy.
I mean, don't you know?
Where's this guy? I don't know what he.
What are they doing? What are they thinking? What are the I know he doesn't do a lot of thinking anymore. I know he's being pushed around.
His advisors aren't doing anything.
That's what I'm wondering. What are they thinking?
I don't know. They act just like Jane Fonda did, sitting on a howitzer in North Vietnam while our guys are getting killed in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same mentality. If these people are the same people like Jane Fonda sitting on that house or, you know, catering to the enemy.
Right. And this is, Jane Fonda was just at that point, just, you know, an individual. She wasn't an effect. But we're talking about the administration of our country. It says here, the Biden administration and the UN are working to release the funds in an effort to stabilize the Afghan economy, which is all but collapsed under Taliban rule. Well, the more money you give to the Taliban, they're just going to extend the kind of crazy terrorist protections or whatever you want to call it that they're doing now. I would think it'd be better to starve them out.
He wants to stabilize their economy? Why don't you stabilize our economy first?
Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy.
I don't get this administration at all.
We left all of our, billions of dollars worth of equipment. Now we're going to send them billions of dollars more. That was supposed to go, it was held in check because of the Afghan government collapsing. So now we got the Taliban. Oh, here, we'll give it to you, you know?
You know when Trump was saying America first? He was thinking of America all the time. This guy's thinking of all the world, giving millions of dollars or billions of dollars to all these other countries. Where are we going to get all this money from?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's right. That's what these 87,000 IRS agents are going to do.
Yes.
After us.
What a mess. We've got...
People don't see this. I find it hard to believe. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Yeah, I do too. We're talking with Angelo Ceresi, our eye in the northern sky, as we like to call. Hey, Angelo, you're up there in Rochester. Are there any, in your state, we're going to have a big primary tomorrow, Tuesday, the 23rd of August.
So are we.
That's what I was going to ask you. So what are the top elections of interest in New York right now?
Well, you got the Democrats that are... kind of leading in everything right now. Lee Zeldin is behind. He's working hard.
Now, who's he?
He's the Republican candidate for governor.
Okay. And he'll run against who?
And he's going to run against Kathy Hochul.
And she's the current governor?
She's the current governor.
What does, have you seen any polls about that at all?
They said she's up by 11 points, 10, 15 points, you know.
Now, we're only talking the primary, so Zeldin and her won't be running until November.
No, this is because they, what they did is they redistricted.
Oh, so this is tomorrow.
Senate seats and everything, yeah.
Okay, so it looks like Kathy Hochul's going to win, huh?
Well, she's got, I mean, that primary for governor and state senator and everything like that has already been settled. Right now, this is, they're doing districts for the assembly and for the New York State Senate. That's what the primary is for tomorrow, because they redistricted.
All right, well, what I'm asking is there a race for governor right now?
No,
is there a race? Forget about who's going to win.
Right now, it doesn't look good for the Republicans.
Okay, so my point is, when is the election for governor?
November the 8th.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we got some time still.
2 months, you know, we still have 2 months to try and close the gap.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as always, my friend, we appreciate you calling in, getting your thoughts. You have a great week, and we'll look forward to talking with you again, hopefully, on Monday of next week.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. America forever and ever, you know? And
right.
Bless America.
Sounds good to me. Thanks, Angelo.
Take care.
All right. All right. There he goes. We're going to take our final break. And when we come back, Wisconsin and New Jersey school districts decide to remove two completely different symbols, and we're going to tell you what they're really are.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back for the final segment on Monday of Freedom Works. And we thank you for being with us. By the way, we are here on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Radio Network. Hope you can listen in. If you can't, Big Ed puts all our shows on podcast, which means you can go to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com, click on the podcast button, and there are the shows. Most recent show at the top, and you'll see the guest in the top 10, and we thank Ed for doing it. So go there if you want to listen to one of our programs recently, or even some of the older programs, OurFreedomWorks.com. Okay. So we're going to go to Wisconsin and New Jersey to find out what is going on with the removal of a couple of symbols. Let's start with Wisconsin. A Wisconsin school board has voted in favor of a policy that bans gay pride flags and Black Lives Matter flags from classrooms. Did you realize that they were there hanging in a lot of classrooms already, apparently? And they say that they are banning them because of political messaging. Here is Superintendent Stephen Plum. He says teachers and administration will not have political flags or religious messaging in their classroom or on their person. So that's going on there. In the meantime, in New Jersey, an elementary school in New Jersey
wants to change its name after a successful year-long campaign to end its association with Thomas Jefferson. So this is the Jefferson School, Jefferson Elementary School. It's in South Orange, New Jersey. It's going to be renamed Delia Bolden Elementary School. It's going to honor the first black woman to graduate high school in the area. So apparently we're starting to get rid of our presidents, especially the early ones. You know, the George Washingtons and the James Madisons and the Thomas Jeffersons. They had an alternative choice besides this Delia Bolden to rename the school. They were thinking of naming it Ruth Bader Ginsburg Elementary School or New Legacy Elementary School. The school says that the initiative actually came from the students. However, faculty members have been vocal in their support of renaming the school. Here is a board member, Cowie Telesford. I want to make that point that Thomas Jefferson owned over 600 slaves. He freed two while he was alive and seven after he died, which basically means I have a 1.5% chance of being free in Thomas Jefferson's world. Obviously, Cowie Telesford is black. So I am not thankful to him. I am thankful to the people who made sure that I could actually be free and be on the board with you today. So, here we go, right? Going to be a bunch of schools. They're going after Abraham Lincoln as well, from what I understand. Woodrow Wilson is another one, our president during World War I. Kind of scary, kind of sad. If we were to look at the foibles of the people who happen to adorn the names of our schools, I can tell you a guy that had a lot of foibles. We don't like to talk about it. He was a good man, but he had a lot of foibles. That was Martin Luther King Jr.
If one of the requirements...
He was running around, he was a minister running around with other women. That doesn't do you well when you profess to be a minister of God. Go ahead.
If one of the requirements for being in political office were you had to have an absolutely squeaky clean record.
Yeah, only you and me.
We couldn't fill the men's room.
No, you're right. No, that's the thing. I mean,
and I'm not putting down or putting off slavery. It was a horrible thing.
No, it was horrible.
But the thing is, we can look back at it and learn from it. Just like every other situation, we've learned, we've developed, we've evolved, but that doesn't mean you just go back and erase it.
Correct.
You know, that's the worst. You know, if anything you do in life, if you just...
If we're picking and choosing crimes.
Yeah.
Okay, he did this, but this guy didn't do that. He might have done the other thing, but he didn't do the one we're upset about. You know what I mean?
If you ignore the things you did bad in the past, you will continue to do them in the future.
We will have no statues honoring anybody if we're looking for people that are perfect, obviously. None of them. None of them. We look at the things that they did to better mankind. They may have done some bad things, too. But the things that they did to better mankind, and we decide, okay, George Washington, who probably was a slave owner, he was a wealthy man, but he also helped this country. He helped with the American Revolution. He led the troops, and he became our first president, too. I would say that he's done some things that helped us, you know.
But on the other hand, you can put a statue and glorify a man who was unjustly killed by a police officer, but did a lot of drugs, dealing in drugs, put a gun to a pregnant woman's belly, but that's okay.
Yeah, we honor certain people shouldn't be honored at all. No question about it. All right. Well, my friend, it is time for our top 10. And I think we've got a good one. This comes from Wallet Hub. These are the top 10 states with the best community colleges. Okay? Now, Wallet Hub compared 667 community colleges in the American Association of Community Colleges, and they used 19 metrics. However, there is a caveat. 9 states did not have three or more schools ranked in the list, and therefore they're not included. The nine states that did not have the 667, at least three of them, were Alaska, Delaware, Florida, Idaho, Indiana, Nevada, Rhode Island, Utah, and Vermont. So they're not included. So it does skew it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Okay. But here we go. Top 10 states, best community colleges. Number 10, Oregon. Yes, indeed. The state of Oregon, number 10. Number 9, North Dakota. Ah, that's interesting in North Dakota, way up there. All right, number 8. That fell off the stool there trying to do the drum. Number 8 is Wyoming. A lot of good community colleges apparently there. Number 7, Minnesota. Minnesota's got a lot of community colleges. Number 6.
I hate when buttons don't work.
Number 6 is Wisconsin. We were just talking about Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever known? Can you tell when somebody is from Wisconsin?
Absolutely.
I can.
Wisconsin.
No, I mean, really.
Yeah, Wisconsin.
If somebody walked into the studio, could you tell if they were from Wisconsin?
Yeah, I could tell it's northern, and then I can usually narrow it down.
Okay, very good. Number 5. This is sort of a, I don't know what you call it. Anyway, it's Hawaii. They got a lot of community colleges. Apparently, they're doing well there. Number 4.
I don't know anybody that'd probably go to Hawaii just for the college.
Yeah. There's a lot of other things to do.
I think you could be in Hawaii and maybe go to a college, but.
Yeah, that's true. Well, number 4 is the state of Washington. Have you noticed that we've got a lot of states in the Pacific Northwest? Oregon, Washington, we got Wyoming out there. Pretty good. Okay. Number 3, New Mexico. Indeed, New Mexico. Apparently is doing well with that. Number 2, Maryland. I'm not surprised about Maryland. I would think so. I would think so. All right, Ed, I'm going to, I don't know if you recall all those 9.
Yeah.
Okay, you do. All right, I'll give you a hint. This one is very, this one's fairly close.
All right.
Fairly close to Maryland. Geographically. I'll give you another.
How about Virginia?
That's a good guess, actually. Very good guess. But it's Connecticut.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Connecticut is also the home to Yale, and it's, you know, it's always got a good reputation. I was going to say I would have guessed either Massachusetts or Connecticut.
Mm.
So, not too bad. In fact, on Wednesday, we're going to give you the worst community states with the worst community colleges. Hey, we got a little extra time. Is there anything going on in sports? Oh, I know what I can ask you. Is Tom Brady going to be back for the next and final exhibition?
He's supposed to be back today.
Uh-huh. Oh, good.
I don't know. There's a lot of things flying around. I don't know. At this point, I don't know what the heck is going on.
Really?
I don't know.
I watched them get slapped around a little bit in this
preseason game. Just horrible.
But we don't worry about preseason
Well,
games.
You do if you paid $150 to watch it.
They only scored a field goal, didn't they? Yeah.
I turned it off a couple of times.
But turned it back on again. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you all for listening. We are going to be back on Wednesday. Be safe, and remember, freedom works.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM.